Hey, listeners, Andy Studna, editor of Applied Clinical Trials here. As you may or may not have heard, our editor-in-chief, Lisa Henderson, is no longer with ACT, but she appears in this episode as it was pre-recorded. Enjoy. Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, editor of Applied Clinical Trials, and I'm here today with our editor-in-chief, Lisa Henderson. For today's episode, we are speaking with Jimmy Bechtel, Vice President of Site Engagement for the Society of Clinical Research Sites.
Jimmy started his career as a finance analyst for the Corvallis Clinic and eventually moved up the ladder to Clinical Research Operations Coordinator. Following his time there, he worked with Eli Lilly as a consultant until 2018. And since then, Jimmy has been with SCRS. So he started first as a senior project manager, then director of innovation of engagement, and now in his current role as VP of site engagement, which he started in 2021. So thank you for joining us today, Jimmy.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you all for having me.
Thanks, Jimmy. So first question, could you take us through some of the details of your career path?
Absolutely. As Lisa had mentioned, I started out as an intern in finance, thinking I wanted to go into healthcare finance and be the CFO of a clinic or a hospital system or something along those lines. And it just so happened that the CFO that I was interning under also managed the research department for the clinic that I was in, the Corvallis Clinic. And so I did a couple of projects for them. And as I neared the end of that role, a new role had came up in the research department as the data specialist and patient recruiter, kind of that entry level position. And as most of us, it was kind of a scratch on the head question mark. Wasn't really sure what clinical research was other than the few little projects I had assisted them with. But it seemed really interesting and I was strongly encouraged to apply. So I did and got the job and then quickly made my way up through the site from that data specialist to the regulatory manager, an operations manager for the site, and then was moving my way into overall directorship of the location when I left and went to Eli Lilly and Company, where I worked as a project lead in their clinical innovation group, which is a legacy group now as part of their design hub, but an internal group focused on how we can advance new innovations and technology at the site level and help them do what they do best. So after that, I had the opportunity to come to SCRS, the Society for Clinical Research Sites, where I am today, and really being able to do a lot of the same work and same passion that I was able to bring to the research site at a large scale on behalf of tens of thousands of research sites all over the world. So really being able to translate a lot of those the skills and knowledge that I was able to gain at the site and then again at a sponsor out into the industry.
Clearly, with your experience with working at the sites themselves and then in industry and then moving over to the association, you know, a nonprofit, but educational resource, educational and informational resource for sites. What makes you so passionate about the sites in clinical research?
So a lot of what the sites do and what makes me passionate about it is because of what they do. And the sites are truly centered around advancing medicines for their patients. That's what drives them. That's the reason that they're in existence. And a lot of the reason why individuals enter and stay in this industry, despite a lot of the challenges that exist as we continue through, is it truly is centered around bringing new medicines to patients and treating patients that may have never been able to receive treatment before through the clinical trial process. So that's really inspiring and really, I guess, cliche, but magical to see and to watch happen. Helping sites then for me really centers around allowing them to do what they need to do in the best, most efficient way possible so that they can serve their patients more effectively. Bringing them tools, resources, knowledge, connection opportunities, advocacy efforts, et cetera, through the society, listening to them then as we develop some new aspects of those resources. So again, they can do what they do best. Sites really are the key stakeholder in the relationship that exists between the pharmaceutical companies and bringing their molecule, their treatment to patients everywhere. They're an essential piece of that equation and allowing them to do what they do and help, again, treat those patients is really motivating and inspiring to the work that we do at SCRS.
I wouldn't call it cliche. I mean, we do hear this a lot. You know, professionals in this industry really do care about patients. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. It does carry some uniqueness to it that is other than maybe some other aspects of medicine. It really does have a special connotation and a special purpose that you can't really find anywhere else because we truly are working to save lives in the most innovative way possible.
So moving into what the site landscape looks like right now, how are new site models such as IROs impacting traditional sites and or site networks?
That's a great question. You know, we have a lot of strong relationships with some of the big IROs that are in existence. And as they come and develop new ones, they are also usually very keen to be part of what SCRS does. And I think it's really important to understand, you know, when we talk about how things impact sites, it sometimes comes with this negative pre-connotation, right? This negative conception that it's having some sort of detrimental effect. But I think it should be made clear that there's a lot of room in the industry, especially coming out of COVID, unfortunately, for new, innovative, and different ways of executing clinical research trials and clinical studies and treating those patients. And I think the IRO model specifically, if we want to hone in on that one, is a really interesting and important component, an important site model. They're here really to supplement what one thinks of as a traditional site or a site network by bringing research to organizations that might not have been able to conduct clinical trials otherwise, or it would have taken a significant amount of investment or a heavy lifting on their part and a lot of additional resources that they might not have otherwise, again, been able to bring forward to helping their patients. So that's where the IRO model comes in and some of these other new models of how we and what we consider to be a clinical research site. So all that to say is I think it's a wonderful supplement to what one would consider to be their traditional site or the traditional site network where things might happen a little bit independently, but it's a valued partner, I think, in this equation to bring research to, an organization that might not have been able to bring their patients clinical trials otherwise.
That's a really good point. Having the new models and innovation did not really put that two and two together. You know, I kind of like left them off into their own little world. So I like that viewpoint. So thanks for bringing that up. So as far as, I mean, we know, you know, at Applied Clinical Trials, what is facing the industry, but what do you think is the most specific challenges facing the sites in the past year?
It's a tough one to only talk about for a few minutes, but I'll do my best. Really, there's four that come to the top of mind and that we are addressing specifically, and which we'll get into a little bit. But the four big, I guess, overarching buckets of challenges that sites have been facing in the last year or so. Some of them are, I guess, newer. Some of them are a result of COVID, but some of them have just been this continued trend in the industry that has, I guess, not lessened in its intensity and level of challenge that sites face as a result of it. For example, I'll go through four of them. One of them is workforce. That challenge at the research site has been a challenge for sites. It's an insurmountably more so a challenge as a result of COVID-19 and the pandemic and the shutdowns and all these other aspects of that. It really became something that was even more of a pressing issue for the research sites, but for the clinical research community as a whole, as a result, because when you have less individuals in the research workforce overall, you're not able to execute the trials as fast as you want. And the industry has really had to slow down, unfortunately, for the patients, the speed of development that we had normally seen, because there's not enough personnel at the research sites, there's not enough research sites, and there's not enough personnel at our sponsor and CRO partners to execute these clinical trials at the pace we had been executing them prior to the pandemic. So we kind of had this weird pause period in 2020 and 2021 where we were trying to assess what was being done. And now coming out of that, we're still in the middle of this, really this reeling that we are having to adjust and understand the pace at which we need to do it. And also then trying to understand how we can continue to grow this workforce. It's a, again, it's a problem we had, but hadn't really directly addressed it in some ways that we are now because we were comfortable with the speed at which we were going. People just don't really recognize clinical research as a career option in a lot of cases. You go out and you talk to people that are in pre-med or people that are even in medical school, and they're not as aware of this, we'll call it a specialty of medicine, as they are maybe anesthesiology or surgery or whatever it might be. Yet it is, as we've alluded to, such a rewarding career for people who might have the mind to participate in all the different aspects of research. So a lot of work is being done to raise awareness of research as a career option, but that's just one example of something that might be solution oriented for a workforce, but isn't necessarily something that is going to be a quick fix. There really aren't a lot of quick fixes to address the workforce challenge because we didn't have a large workforce pool to pull from to begin with. And a lot of what we see in research related to that has to do with the fact that we require so much different experience from the people that we bring into clinical trials and our workforce. So that's one problem. I could probably talk about that one for hours because it is such a pressing issue. The other one I want to address is tougher protocols. We've continued to see our protocols become more and more complicated as time goes on. We're asking more and more of our sites and our patients in an individual protocol than we have ever done before. We're asking more scientific questions. We have more endpoints that we're trying to analyze as a result of those protocols. Essentially, we're cramming as much as we can into one protocol to try to get as much information and data out of it for efficiency's sake. But what that ends up doing is putting just additional burden on the site for those clinical trials and makes them that much more difficult for the sites and the patients to then execute them, and oftentimes draws them out even longer. You open up for more degrees of error when it comes to challenges and protocol deviations when you do those kinds of things with complicating the protocols. So again, not something that's easily addressable other than raising awareness and having conversations with sites around this is what needs to happen when it comes to the protocols and how we make sure that that additional work is manageable at the site level really boils down to, again, having that open communication, that open dialogue, and making sure that our protocols are, frankly, just executable at the site level. Ask them, bring those in front of the sites and have those discussions. Another thing that we've seen related to challenges recently really coming to a head is technology. We've really seen this integration and disbursement of a lot of new technologies to enable our clinical trials to be done in settings that are more possibly conducive for the patients. We often term them as decentralized clinical trials, but I want to recognize that term is sort of a result of not really knowing what we were doing with those. But really what we like to use is technology-enabled trials. We'll use those terms interchangeably, but technology-enabled trials, things with e-vis and e-thingies and e-devices and telemedicine and remote clinical trials, we don't really understand yet. We're getting the cart, I would rather say, I guess, a little bit ahead of the horse when it comes to technology in our clinical trials. We're implementing these things, we're asking sites and patients to use them, yet we don't seem to have, as an industry, the appropriate amount of infrastructure behind those technologies in the form of support and education and knowledge, nor have our budgets and contracts been able to keep up or catch up to the amount of extra work or new work that comes as a result of those technologies. We're getting the same old budgets for the same old trials, yet we're asking the patients and sites to use and implement this new technology that comes with new and different ways of allocating resources. So again, another one that we could talk about for hours, but that really does center around that challenge. And then the last one I do want to mention briefly is a lack of evolution in site payments. SCRS has been collecting data for several years now around what's being done from a site perspective as it pertains to things like contract withhold or holdbacks, and the percentage that's being held back and the amount of contracts that are being seen with holdback in them when they get the initial offer, as well as payment terms. When we say payment terms, we mean things like milestone payments, quarterly payments to the sites, or monthly payments to the sites. It's no question overwhelmingly that the sites consistently request 0% holdbacks on all of their clinical trial contracts, as well as monthly payments. Educated and well-versed sites that are oftentimes members of SCRS and participate in conversations around that topic know that that's something that they can ask for, and oftentimes know then how to ask for it to get it. But it still is something that a lot of sites see. Over half of our sites see some sort of withhold or quarterly payments as the initial offer from the sponsors and CROs, yet we've been asking for change in that space for years and years. So it provides a lot of financial detriment to the site when we operate under those business practices. So being flexible in our payment terms, I think, is really important for sponsors and CROs as they approach their agreements with the clinical trial sites.
Wow, that was great, Jimmy. Thank you. Now, in your answer there, you probably highlighted a few of these things, touch on them a bit, but what is SCRS currently working on, and what are some plans you're looking forward to in the future?
Thanks for the question. I think it's important that we address all of those things directly. And we have several initiatives in place, multi-stakeholder initiatives with sponsors, CROs, technology service providers, and other service providers in the industry, as well as, of course, most importantly, the sites that are part of SCRS, all coming together based on their interest and subject matter expertise to directly address some of these problems through, again, our initiatives. We have a payment initiative that is working on how we address the withhold challenge and the monthly payment challenge, as well as the taxation in the United States of patient stipends. I'm sure that everyone on the line or listening knows that in the United States, the IRS taxes any amount of patient reimbursement for participation in clinical trials over $600, which for certain clinical trials is a drop in the bucket, to be frank, with what patients get and what they frankly deserve for their participation and their volunteerism for those clinical trials. So that's what the payment initiative is addressing, bringing all these constituency groups together and these individuals to address this. How do we identify and clearly line out what the challenge is, as well as what the solution needs to look like, and then bring that solution to the necessary individuals within the organizations that make these decisions and make these policies so that we can start to see change when it comes to payments. We also have the diversity initiative. And I know I didn't talk about that challenge specifically, but I think it's really, really important to mention diversity in our clinical trials and how critical it is that we continue to focus on how we bring diverse patient populations into our clinical studies so that the clinical trials and the data that we are bringing back to the FDA most accurately reflects the demographics and the data of the patients that are affected by that condition, that disease, or need that treatment most. That really is what it boils down to for us. So we bring the site perspective and the site aspect of diversity to these conversations, but also then bring important information from our other constituency groups, those sponsors and CROs, back to the sites so that they have the knowledge and information and education that they need to successfully bring about diverse patient enrollment and recruitment and retention practices to their research sites so that they're accurately representing diverse, equitous, and inclusive patient populations in their clinical trials. Speaking to technology, the Digital Innovation Initiative is exactly addressing some of the key points that I had mentioned in my previous answer around how we make sure sites are ready and capable of engaging in these technologies and these tools on their clinical trials, but also then bringing the necessary feedback and information back to the sponsors and the CROs and the technology companies so that they can continue to develop and iterate on solutions that are site and patient centric going forward and are really implementable at the site level with no burden, but in fact, enhancing their ability to conduct their clinical trials and treat their patients. And then finally, the other important initiative that I would mention is our oncology program. This program actually has its own event, its own summit. It's one of six summits that we put on throughout the year. This one's focused specifically on oncology, but our other ones focus on different other aspects or geographies of the world. Oncology program is recognizing that oncology clinical trials are different enough that they need their own special attention to address and solve for the nuances and intricacies that exist when it comes to, again, conducting oncology clinical trials. So we work on things like education and making sure that what we're bringing to the sites is valuable, but also the most valuable conversations can happen amongst clinical research sites and the other constituency groups and those other stakeholders.
So I'm going to jump in there on that oncology piece. So it's a summit, and then everyone that is running oncology trials gets together, and you have speakers that talk, but they also get to share their own issues or concerns.
That's exactly right. It's a summit and a program. So I guess out like diversity is a program. Out of diversity was born the Diversity Site Solutions Summit or conference. Mm-hmm. We call them summits. But oncology functioned in a similar way. It was a program first, addressing the needs and challenges. And we felt as a program with our involved individuals at an event, an opportunity to come together and make those connections and deepen some of the knowledge and learnings and conversations that are happening amongst the sites and the other parties, the other stakeholders. That event would be a valuable way to do that. So it's been perpetuated for a number of years now in the form of that in-person summit, which is going to be taking place down in Atlanta, Georgia in the spring of 2024.
Excellent. Good to know. I mean, I can see how valuable that would be, you know. Well, you're right. I mean, we could talk about all the things that you mentioned forever. I really appreciate your views. The site payment piece, so important. The technology piece. I like that you guys can bring the feedback back to the tech companies, because maybe if they're just hearing from sponsors, maybe it doesn't make as much impact. I don't know. You know, like the people that are actually using it get to have a say. So,
yeah, I think that's really important, is that all constituency groups, all stakeholders, as you mentioned, can have opportunities to come together and talk about solutions. It's one thing. And we see it a lot in the industry and on social media, even within our industry. A lot of people like to bring up challenges and problems, and they don't come to the table with solutions, and they don't come with the approach that we need to work together and collaborate in order to make these solutions viable. It's one thing for sites to stand up and say, this is hard, I don't like this, this is a challenge. For sponsors and CROs then in turn to say, oh, we can't do that because of X, Y, and Z. But where the power and the solutions really come to life is when we can come together, which I think is a lot of the spirit of what those events that SCRS puts on and those opportunities that SCRS brings all of our involved parties really embodies, is that we can come together and collaborate and work on solutions together, come up with something that is viable when all parties feel heard, and then bring those solutions back to our organizations and implement them. That's the critical step, right? Is bringing those things back, implementing them, and the change being seen amongst whomever it's most applicable to going forward. Because it doesn't help anyone if we come together, talk and then no action happens as a result of it. But we could be here again for hours and talk about all the different things that have come out of the conversations that we've seen and facilitated as part of the SCRS's events and other instances that we have for collaboration.
Great. Thank you, Jimmy. You know, that does it for our questions. Is there anything else you would like to discuss or any closing thoughts before we end?
None other than, again, appreciating the opportunity and the time. I value being able to discuss what SCRS does and the part that we play, and want to thank you all for the time today.
Thank you so much.